Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, April 28th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the internet at whyagain.org. If you go to that website, click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner. It will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been gifted. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click on the link, download the file, print it off, and copy it as often as you'd like to use it absolutely free. You can also go to your App Store, the iOS or the Google Play, and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, as well as a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often, because it frequently leads to comments and questions and testimonials, as well as leading to people having a better experience of life, a more loving, a more productive, a more respectful, a more gratitude-based experience of life moment to moment. And we appreciate it whenever anybody chooses to do that for themselves, because we understand in this work that we are all connected. And if you are making your life a better experience for yourself, you're also helping to make the world a better place. We also have support groups that are offered free of charge on Tuesdays and Thursdays through Zoom on the internet. And so if you are interested in that, today being a Thursday, there will be a support group tonight from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. And all the information you need to join us there or to forward that information to somebody else who may want to join us is available on the website at mindshiftersacademy.org. And please remember there's a separate page, a separate information for logging in on Tuesday and Thursday. They do not work interchangeably. And I believe this Thursday we will be watching the last hour of the video titled The Condor Flies to the Eagle, the Mayan Calendar Video, the third hour of the three-hour lecture by Ian Lunghold. And then having discussion and or doing a worksheet or having somebody map out a worksheet to do between sessions. And you're welcome to join, and you're encouraged to spread the news to anybody that you think might benefit. This is a resource that's been available for 18 years on Tuesday night, and probably 8, pushing 9 years on Thursday nights. And the reason it's now happening two nights a week is that when I was doing it one night a week and donating my time to that, it was one of my favorite things to have occur in the week. And so I went to the effort of expanding my office and making it possible to do a second night of the week in my office. So again, all the information about that is available on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website, along with a host of other files related to MindShifters Radio and the MindShifter support groups. I did have some difficulty yesterday getting the file from yesterday's show edited and uploaded. The internet was just not willing to upload that file. So it is finally available today on that MindShiftersAcademy.org website. There's a separate page for the first 12 lessons of The Way of Mastery where I'm simply reading the book as close to verbatim as I can manage. And then there's a separate page for the shows that we've been doing since January 10th where I'm reading them and doing a commentary. And so if you want to go back and review what's happening in any of these shows here in the middle of the week, as soon as I can, I get them, and time allows, I get them edited just the first hour, separated out from the MindShifters radio show, and uploaded to the page on MindShiftersAcademy.org website that says Way of Mastery with commentary. So, as usual, when I begin the show, I mention that we are always glad to have comments or questions. If you have any of those for us, please give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1, and that will put a little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I will turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code. And barring anybody doing that in the very near future, I will go back to the Way of Mastery lessons that we've been working on and yesterday I did a fairly quick overview of the first 9 lessons simply from their title and then their one little essence that I could pull out of it that would be relevant to share. And then I started reading lesson 10. And our pattern has been to read each of the lessons at least twice, but I just felt called to move on to lesson 10 because it seems to flow with me that from lesson 9 that says all events are neutral and the Western mind wants to argue and fight with that and has been trained that this is good and that's bad and things are not neutral, et cetera. And lesson 10 is another red flag for the Western mind. It's really like the red cape being waved in front of the bull, and it's titled, The way is easy and without effort. And the Western mind has been conditioned to experience the world as complex and complicated and difficult and arduous. And so one of the things I said before I started reading Lesson 10 yesterday was, please, if you're going to listen to this or read the book, put a little bit extra energy of your own mind energy into watching for the earliest warning signs of a tension or a resistance or an anger or frustration or sadness or confusion. And call a time out if that happens and take a breath and use the tools that you have available to you or the ones that we mention as the reality management worksheet or the EFT tapping or the breath work to soften and turn the focus inside yourself and ask yourself, how is it you're creating that judgment, that frustration, that tension, that confusion, that hurt, etc.? And do that routinely to come as close as you can to restoring yourself to calm, relaxed state, openness, questioning, allowance, surrender, before you move on. Because if you don't, you are going to shut down, shut out, resist, push away the valuable messages that can come from a lesson, even though the title of it, the very title of it, might seem ridiculous to you, might seem absolutely wrong and contrary to your life experience. And where we left off yesterday, I had read a suggested practice. And I likened this practice to something else we've talked about extensively on these internet shows and in the support groups. And this is this filter that I can apply to my life that says, every human being is doing the best they can in each new present moment with whatever resources they have available in that moment. And I say when I talk about this that I don't know that that's true in an absolute sense, and yet I do have the experience that the more I practice using that filter on how I look at my life and the people around me, the better my life gets. The more I act from the assumption and I look for the ways to observe that everyone has done the best they can in each moment with whatever resources they have, the better my life gets. And if I do that long enough, it's been my experience that I wake up eventually and say, oh my gosh, if everybody's doing the best they can in each moment with whatever resources they have, that means I've always done the best I could in each moment with whatever resources I have. So all of that mind energy that I had used in the past to criticize myself, judge myself negatively, beat myself up emotionally is unuseful, unnecessary, and I'm that much closer to dropping it. So the exercise that was recommended in Lesson 10 was that after you sit in your chair for 5 minutes a day, perhaps you're doing it to just be with yourself, perhaps you're doing it to imagine what it would be to be a Christ, then say to yourself, here I am free in this moment. Heaven is here now. The past is passed away, and I can choose anew. Therefore, this day, I commit myself to teaching only love through the process of sharing only loving thoughts. This one day, I will look upon each person that comes into my experience, and I will first breathe deeply into the presence of my awareness of the Holy Spirit, of the Christ mind, of the one mind, of the connection to my source. And then I will look out through eyes that have been transformed by the simple acknowledgement of the truth. Here's the truth that I acknowledge. All minds are joined. And the person in front of me is not a stranger. The person in front of me is one who walks as I walk, who feels as I feel, who longs as I long, who is humbled as I am humbled, and who prays for peace as I have prayed for peace. With that recognition, therefore, in this next moment, I will give them what they seek. I will extend the peace of the knowledge of awareness, of the Christ mind, of the connection to the one mind, of our true nature as love, the extension of loving energy and form. I will root myself in my conscious awareness of that and share that awareness with them, and in the giving it to them, I receive it. Just a thought, just an option, just a practice, which each and every time I have engaged that practice, it has changed my life in ways that I highly prefer. And it's part of what's helped me spend the tiniest fraction of time in my life these days in the negative emotional states, which used to occupy far more, a far larger percentage of my life experience before engaging this work and actively applying these tools. The text goes on, and the next section is titled, Acknowledge the Truth That Sets You Free. The text reads, the way in this work is so simple and so easy that the mind of the world overlooks it. The Western mind, the conscious logical mind, the egoic mind, what Michael Rice calls the non-being mind, that thinks that it simply cannot be. Things have to be more complicated because that's how the Western mind has been trained. And that's what the intellect does. It's like a hard drive in your mind. It's just got a receptacle that we shove full of all of these judgments and language differences and comparisons and competitions. And then once it's in there, all it can do is spit it back out. In the intellect, there is no great wisdom. In the intellect, there is no connection to the higher source. In the intellect, it is just a simple tool. And you are far more than the intellect that you possess and the thoughts that are in the intellect. The text reads, but that which is simple seems impossible to that which insists on complexity. And the mind that insists on conflict simply cannot accept that there is another way. Yet, what waits before you is simply this. In the end of all your struggles, in the end of all your doubts, in the end of all of the moments of your unconscious conforming to the mind of the world, in the end of all of that, there remains a simple choice to be made. The choice to acknowledge the truth that has already set you free. And the text describes that in the following quote. Quote, I and my Creator are one. It has been that way forever. It was accomplished in the being of Yeshua ben Joseph, who revealed to me the truth of myself because he loved me. And if he can do it, I can do it. Even in this moment, I accept my destiny to walk this earth awake and at peace, in mastery and not in fear. And I begin my ministry now. Close quotes. So, repeatedly through this work, from the first lesson on, this work spells out explicitly that your body, the body that you call your own, is just a physical expression of the creative energies. And it's intended to be a very temporary communication device. It is not who you are. If you think you are the body, Ian Lungholt said this in his intro in the beginning of his The Condor Flies to the Eagle. He says, if you think you are your body, get over that. You are far more than your body. And so what is your body? It's a very temporary communication device. And whatever we choose to think and say and do with the body is constantly creating messages to the rest of the world about what we value. So if we spend a lot of time in frustration, we are communicating that we value frustration. If we spend a lot of time in judgment, we're communicating that we value judgment. If we spend a lot of time in anger, we're communicating that we value anger above everything else. Guy Finley has a series of talks in where he says, I hate to break the news to you, but whatever you're doing it because you value it above all other things. If you're staying in depression, it's because you value the depression. If you're staying in rage, it's because you're valuing rage. So it isn't just the way of mastery in the Course in Miracles. This cuts across a lot of deep traditions that come right down to a very practical approach and says, look, we only do what we value. And if we say we value joy and peace and love, but we walk around with a chip on our shoulder, the truth is we value the chip on our shoulder. So from the very beginning of this work, it talks about the body as not what you are. It's just something on loan from your creator. It's just this temporary manifestation in the physical realm, and that it's constantly communicating to everyone in the world around you what you value most. And then in the past couple chapters, it's talked about the word ministry, because when you are expressing, when you are thinking, when you are speaking, when you are acting, you're broadcasting what you value the most. You're communicating powerfully what you value the most. You're teaching what you value the most. And this work continually brings us up to the realization that the most effective thing for us to teach in each moment is the truth of life, which is that all there is the energy of creation that some call love. And so if we teach only love, we demonstrate that we value that energy of creation and our connection, conscious connection, our conscious awareness of our connection to our source. The connection to our source is always there. It can't ever be separated. We can't be separated from the truth of our existence. And so we're invited to step into the awareness that everything we do and say is actively communicating to the people around us what we value most. And so on page 123 and 124 in lesson 10, it says, this stuff is easy if you don't get it mucked up with the intellect and the conditionings of your culture and your life. And if you don't make the mistake of believing you are your body and that you have to defend things, it's easy if you just ask to be shown, if you return your conscious focus to your true nature as love, and then extend that love to everyone and everything in your life. If you make the commitment to teaching only love, how do you do that? By sharing only loving thoughts. How do you do that? Before you engage anyone or anything, you take a breath, you turn the focus inside, and you connect your conscious awareness to your true nature, to the forces of creation that are breathing you and beating your heart and digesting your food and have given you this gift of existence, and then you extend that. And then you look through eyes that have been transformed, and instead of seeing a stranger in front of you, even if they're raging at you, you see another being of brilliance and light who has either temporarily forgotten or yet to discover their brilliance, and you simply extend to them your knowledge of their true nature and yours. And here's another way to talk about it. Quote, I and my Creator are one. It has been that way forever. It was demonstrated, the word here is accomplished, but it was demonstrated by Yeshua over 2,000 years ago. And he revealed to me the truth of myself because he knows he's love and he knows that I'm love. And he's extending that knowledge and that awareness to us. And if he can do it, I can do it. Even in this moment, I accept my destiny to walk this earth awake and at peace in mastery, which we've learned in previous lessons. Mastery arises from innocence, from questioning, from asking to be taught and shown. And if I am in peace, and if I am rooted in the innocence of asking to be shown, there will be no fear. Fear is this emotional state created from the false perception of separation. And we are encouraged to begin that ministry now. When is now? Now is always this next new presence moment, as Guy Finley talks about it. It's not a thing, it's a state. So the text goes on and asks after that quote, "For who can you seek that can heal you? Who can you discover that can bring some form of magic to you that can overcome your resistance to the truth," capital T, truth. Look high and look low and you will not find anyone who can heal you, who can bring this magic to you that will overcome your resistance. You can seek forever, and you will remain a seeker forever. For the truth, capital T truth, is set within your heart. And all power under heaven and earth is given unto you. So if you want to resist seeing it, you can resist seeing it. There will never be anybody who has the power to take away your choice. For truth is set within your heart, and all power under heaven and earth is given unto you. It is that power that you possess that changes the momentum of the mind and heals every wounded perception when you allow it, when you choose it. The text goes on and says, "In the end of all seeking, you must look into the mirror and decide to be one who heals yourself. You are the one who decides from infinite freedom how to use the power of your mind in each moment. Therefore, the only question that a seeker of truth really needs ask him or herself is this: would I know peace or conflict? Would I be right or happy? Would I see the complete neutrality of all of the events in this world as wisps of a dream that are being birthed and passing away? Would I see myself whole and complete? For as I look upon the world, I have judged myself. And as I look upon myself, I judge the world. Close quote. So, again, the intellect is going to look at this and have a field day and come up with all kinds of conflicts and contraindications and, well, this is saying that in a heartbeat I can be enlightened and be enlightened forever, and then other times it says, you know, this takes work and perseverance, and yeah, there are conflicts that the mind will throw up. There are what some have called a paradox or a koan. We've talked about these seemingly conflicting statements. And you're not going to get where you say you want to go by figuring it out. This is what Dr. Michael Rice talks about as this whole list of pseudo-solutions of the egoic mind, the non-being mind, the conscious logical mind. And the primary, the most devastating, the most pervasive solution for the logical, conscious, non-being mind is, I'm going to figure it out. So that's what Dr. Michael Rice talks about. And here, beginning in the first lesson on page 5, it says, we want to let you know right at the beginning of this, in lesson 1, this way of the heart, this pathway we're on in these first 12 lessons, this is not something your conscious logical mind can do for you. It is not the way of the intellect. If you want to align with this pathway, you're going to have to expand your awareness of your true nature, of ways of knowing, intuiting, connecting, being taught, being led, being guided that are not in the logical realm. They're only available to you when you use the intellectual mind to see the false as the false, as Krishnamurti would point out. To see things that people would present to you as, quote, truth, close quotes, as false. And to see the truth purely, simply for what it is, to be constantly questioning, constantly observing, living your life from the active process of observation. And observation that doesn't then load up the intellect with all kinds of data points and then churn to find some rationalized answer. Observation as a state of present moment awareness, openness, allowance, trusting, surrendering, asking to be shown, innocence, all these different words for a state of being, of experiencing that goes way beyond words. So these words are not the thing. That's another thing Krishnamurti would call us to. Label it all you want, describe it to others all you want, and you're going to stay stuck in that process. Make a change in how you use the tool that's supposed to be a very simple tool, which is your conscious logical mind, and how you value the tool compared to how you value this ability you have to tap into something higher, something more integrated, something more loving, something that we're using words like consciousness to describe it. We're using words like our higher self, our soul, our Christ mind. We're using all these different words to point at something that is completely different than the intellectual process that judges and evaluates and compares and is in competition. Over and over again in this work, already in just the first nine lessons, it has said to us that love is the opposite of fear. Judgment is the opposite of love. Comparison is the opposite of love. The awakened heart is what we're going for. We're trying to tune into. We're trying to learn to experience our life and be guided by this awakened heart, this openness, this conscious awareness of our connection to something more than the conscious logical mind. As I look upon myself, as I judge myself, I've judged the world. In lesson 3, it says, every time you judge another, you've declared that you are not innocent. And every time there's a judgment that arises in your mind, you can know that that judgment is in error. That judgment is, what one of the lines from A Course in Miracles says is, that's a perception. And perception was made as an attack on God, on life, on the flow of life energy. Judgment is deciding, oh, this is good, and that means there's something must be bad, or that's bad, and shouldn't be. And yet it's just the flow of life. And this taken outside the intellect into this being in the flow gives us an experience of life that we cannot get when we pull ourselves out of it and judge as though we're separate. So the questions that we're asked to think about are, would I know conflict or would I know peace? Would I fight for my right to be correct, that I'm right and you're wrong, or would I choose to be happy? Will I accept and appreciate the complete neutrality of all events in this world as just wisps of a dream, this flow of life energy? This text, this work says everything that is birthed in time will end in time. It is just energy, and energy is eternal, but energy is always in motion and always changing form. So when something as energy has been so lowered in its vibrations to become perceptible to the senses, and therefore something we call matter or mass or wood or cloth or a tree or a bird or a person, it's just energy that has temporarily taken a form that's perceptible to these five senses. In fact, everything that's birthed in time, according to this text, will end in time. Bodies arise and pass away. Planets arise and pass away. Trees, birds, clouds. In the process of observing that, and allowing the truth of that to just be without my resisting it or judging it or trying to change it, will I then choose to see myself as whole and complete, my essence as whole and complete, just as it is? Because if I don't allow that my essence is whole and complete just as it is, it means I'm judging myself. And as I judge myself, I judge the world. And as I judge something, I take myself, I create for myself the experience of being separate, and I create a fantasy, a hallucination. Area code 808. I'm making the attempt to turn on your microphone. Are you there?
I think so. Are you there?
It Sounds like Roma.
Can you hear me? Yeah. I ordered the book because I wanted to read along with you, but I think I bought the wrong book. It's kind of confusing. I bought something called The Way of Mastery, Pathway of Enlightenment, The Way of Knowing, Christ Mind Trilogy, Volume 3. What are you reading from?
I am reading from Volume 1.
Oh, well, all right.
And I'm looking at a book. I'm holding a book.
Yeah.
A hardback book that contains all three volumes. And what you bought is just the last 11 lessons in the book that I'm holding.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Because
all right. Well, I will get back online and see if I can get the whole thing. So I'm assuming that since this says it's the Christ Mind Trilogy Volume 3, that there's a Volume 1 and a Volume 2, right?
Yes, the first volume is the one I'm reading. It's called The Way of the Heart. And when this was first given to John Mark Hammer, now known as JM, it was given as an audio. He would sit down, turn on the microphone, and just start speaking. And he would do that once a month for the first 12 months. And there were people that would be on a mailing list, and they would get a copy of the cassette tape, and they'd have that copy of that tape for a month to listen to and work with and meditate on, and then the next month they'd get another tape. And eventually that went on for 3 years, and so 35 separate lessons, roughly one a month. Eventually the group was formed into a not-for-profit, and that not-for-profit foundation is known as the Shanti Cristo Foundation. And they decided not to just keep it as three separate books the way it was given, The Way of the Heart, The Way of Transformation, and The Way of Knowing, three separate books. They decided to publish them all together in one big blue book called The Way of Mastery. And what you did is just buy the third book instead of all three.
Well, oh well. Anyway, I'll keep trying. Thank you.
Well, and the other thing you can do is go to christmind.info, and you can be reading along if you have your internet up right there, because it has The Way of Mastery. It has two different versions of A Course in Miracles. It has the book by Joseph S. Benner, The Impersonal Life. And it has them in such a way that you can scroll through and read them right there free online. So if you wanted to be following along with where we are before you make the purchase, you can go to christmind.info. And be reading along there.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'll continue listening.
All right.
Let's keep on keeping on. Okay.
All right.
Aloha.
Thank you. So, okay, thank you for that reminder, Roma. We haven't really talked about christmind.info very much lately, but it is a wonderful resource. It was created by someone who knows JM quite well, and I know people who make great use of that as a free resource. They do ask you to, you know, if you have the money, go and buy the books, and then just use that resource as an adjunct, but it also has the files loaded up so that you can hear the original speaking of this through JM's voice as Yeshua is feeding him the information. And you can scroll through as you listen to somebody reading the Impersonal Life by Joseph S. Benner, or the Raj material, which is audio files of a Course in Miracles support group, the Course in Miracles, the Sparkly Edition, whatever that refers to. I don't quite remember, but I know there are two different versions of the Course in Miracles on that website. And it might have now books like The Way of the Servant and some other resources that, you know, the Yeshua letters, et cetera, that JM has produced over the years. So we were on, in the book that I have, page 124, and the text goes on to say, "This was the simple secret that I once discovered when I walked upon your planet. It was not about achieving some grand mystical state of consciousness. It was not about acquiring great powers that could attract attention of thousands. It was not even about being able to manifest, although these powers may indeed express themselves through the mind as the mind awakens. What this was about is about accepting the capital T truth that is true always, and about being determined to allow that truth to be the foundation from which you engage with and join each and every moment of your experience." And the text suggests these statements to ground yourself in that. "I am awake. I am safe. I am at peace. What do I truly want this moment to be for? For as I decree it, so shall it be." So it suggests that we start each moment of our awareness with the observation that I am awake, I am safe, I am at peace. And the recognition that whatever I choose to say or speak or do is going to be decreeing to the world, teaching the world what I value most in this moment. And that's just like my mind energy as a creative force that's always on. I'm always going to be creating more of the kinds of things that I point my mind energy to. I'm always going to be communicating to people that I value whatever it is that I say and I do. If I am frequently pouring my mind energy into thoughts that generate anxiety, whether I realize it or not, I'm communicating to the world, to life itself, to the people around me, that I value anxiety above everything else in this moment. This, when I slow down and pay attention to this, this changes everything. When I ask, what do I want this moment to be for? When I ask, how can I be a blessing to myself and others? When I ask, what's mine to do here? It changes everything in my experience of life. And over the years that I've been working with this text and exposed to Dr. Michael Reich's work and the worksheet process and the support groups, I practice more and more and more asking to be shown. I know somebody that was exposed to some of this work and then really it resonated with them to ask to be shown. And then they were fond of saying, I just ask once and that's it. I just ask once in the middle of the day or the beginning of the day. I don't keep asking throughout the day. My experience has been I benefit by asking over and over and over again. I benefit by catching the mind in its spin, in what Guy Finley would call its mechanical level of processing. And I ask over and over and over again to be shown. And you can ask whoever or whatever you want. You can ask without a subject. You can just ask to be shown, or you can ask Ruka. Ruka, the ancient Aramaic word for an elemental force specific to humans that's implanted in each and every one of us. It's a constant, permanent connection we have to the Christ mind, to the great comforter, to your source, whatever. It's an elemental force specific to humans that's there and available for you. And what it will do for you is break off the effects of your errors in thought and guide you to truth and happiness if you just ask it to. Now, that's pretty close to a verbatim of what Dr. Michael Rice used to say on a regular basis when he was asked about Ruka. It's an elemental force specific to humans that's there, that it's implanted in you by your creator, that's available to break off the effects of the errors of your thought and guide you to truth and happiness if you just ask it to. And that's very much like what Guy Finley says when he has this little talk he does, and he says, your creator put you in a world not where you, if you're lucky and you search for years, you can find some guru who will answer your questions. But your creator put you in a world where your instant, constant connection to the forces that can teach you will never abandon you if you just ask to be shown. So here we are over and over again in the way of mastery. It says this is not the way of the intellect, and the way of mastery itself is rooted. It arises from innocence. And the truth is you don't know who or what created you or when you were created or why. You don't know what your brother or sister needs. You don't know what you need. You don't know how you can be a blessing to yourself and others in each moment. So ask. Learn to be comfortable living in the question. Practice living in the question without demanding an answer. Learn to recognize the benefit of walking into each new moment in the ignorance, not knowing, and being in this open space of observing and questioning so that you can trust the flow of creative energy through you, learn to tap into it, and ask it over and over again what it would like to express through you. Keep your intention throughout the day focused on that flow of energy and what might want to express through you and what might be revealed to you as you continually question. Move into the awareness of the tightness and tension and any restriction or resistance or judgment that comes up in you. And at the earliest sign that you become aware of that, cancel it and release it and move into allowance. And then surrender to be taught by whatever arises in the moment and whatever arises within you as you ask over and over again to be shown, what's yours to do here? What does life, light, love want to express through you in this moment? And then continually remind yourself, even as your life gets better and better and better, that you don't know how to do any of this. You don't know how to move across the room. You don't know how to digest the food you eat. You don't know when you were created or who you were created by or what created you. So just keep asking, what would like to express through me in this moment? What is it I'm going to choose to teach in this ministry of life with this very temporary communication device I've been given that we call the body? Because as you decree it, it will be for you. You will be creating your experience of life by where you choose to focus your conscious awareness, by the thoughts you choose to value. And you value those thoughts that you continually engage in. And you value those thoughts that you continually express. And even if you say, I don't value this, I value that, but you keep doing this, the actuality is you only do those things you value. And with that recognition, we can wake up to what we have been valuing, what we continue to value. It's very much like the regulatory speech that Dr. Michael Rice talks about. When I witness myself having a thought like, that person's really making me angry, even though I've been teaching the mind shifters tools and the way of mastery for all these years, when I hear myself have a thought, that person's really wrong and that person's making me angry and that person has no right to do that to me, in that moment, it's there for me to see that what I truly value is the belief that my emotions are caused by people outside of me. So it's just revealed to me something that wasn't in my conscious awareness before. What's in my conscious awareness? Well, I'm on the Mind Shifters radio show, and I'm always teaching people about how we create our own emotions, and you're totally free and safe and complete within yourself as you are, and there's nothing of value that can be added unto you and nothing of value taken from you. And then the next moment, I have a thought that says, that person just stole something from me, and I'm, you know, vehemently angry, and I think it's caused by that person. In that moment, if I'm willing to see it, there's been a revelation. And I can reject the revelation, and if I do, I lose the lesson that goes with it, as Guy Finley would say. Or I can allow. I can embrace. I can explore the revelation and thereby learn more about what's going on in this conscious logical mind and what's been programmed into it. So, we will pick this up again tomorrow. Tomorrow's a Friday, and we'll continue reading more of Lesson 10 with commentary. Thank you, Roma, for your comments, questions, and I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tian. I hope you have a good afternoon.
Same to you. Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Thursday, April the 28th, 2022. And their call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And while we're waiting on Michael to get dialed in, if you're not connected with us on Facebook, we posted yesterday, you know, there was a thing that we studied called orthobiomy, and it's on ways that you can move any joint, any leg, arm, finger, head, any part of your body, and you move it in certain directions, and it lets go of the tension where it's been holding. And it's just an awesome healing modality. And we had done it to Aria a couple of times when she'd like either say that her leg hurt or something. And yesterday she chose to do orthobiotomy on her toy horse. So it was really cute watching her go through the motions and understand, you know, how you can heal without medicine. And you know, medicine has its place, don't get me wrong. But there are so many things that we can do naturally. One of the things, too, is eating good food. And today we went out and we opened the greenhouse up. I think all of our cold nights have passed now. And so we opened it up, and lo and behold, our strawberries had strawberries on them. And so I let Aria pick the first fruits off of it and eat them. And so, you know, there's just a lot of things you can do to take care of yourself in a natural way, to feed your body, to, you know, just let it, give it the opportunity to heal itself. And if you go to our website, whyagain.org, I've actually added a couple of sections on there about nourishment and food. And so you can go out there and check that out. And just look around. There's lots of things that are changing every day out on the website. Let me know if you find something that isn't working right, or if, you know, you need something moved to a different location so it's easier to find. And we'll see what we can do about getting it changed. And hold the space for my technician in India. He was getting real close to submitting for the Apple, the app in Apple, and he's actually had some gastric intestinal issues, and so he's been out of work, and so he was very apologetic that he hadn't gotten it completed yet. So hold the space for his health. And he said, you know, we were talking just a second ago about eating, and he said he knew where he went wrong with it was that he had gone out and just eaten out away from their home. And he didn't say whether it was in a restaurant or what, but anyway, that it really tore up his intestines and stomach. And so now he's paying for it. And he said, I should have known better, but we all do that. So Michael's still not on with us yet. Let me check and see if he's having technical difficulties. And we'd like to hear from you. So if you're on the switchboard, press 1. Ask your questions, your comments. You know, we were traveling yesterday over to visit my dad, and we were a little bit later, and on the way back, I flipped on the radio, and there was, most of you probably heard of Delilah, and she's really good. I mean, she, you know, takes callers, and they call in and, you know, tell what's going on for them, and then she picks a song out and plays for them. And, of course, we're not set up to do that. We've tried to play music over the switchboard that we have, and it doesn't come across good. But Michael said that would be a cool way of doing the show, too, to have people call in with their what's going on for them and to process with them and talk to them and then play a song. So that's kind of in the back of the mind, but it probably won't happen anytime soon. But anyway, that was interesting. Welcome, Michael.
I'd be up for the door opening for that, sweetie. I think that there's a station out there that would just love to have, you know, and I mean something that has this 50,000-watt, you know, countrywide signal, that would love to have and represent true healing work that really supports people opening on a whole other level. So I'll hold the space. Maybe there's somebody listening right now that has a connection. Who knows? We'll see how that door opens, when and if it's ready. So.
Yeah, we had a hand just go up.
Well, great. Let's say hello.
517, you're on the air.
Well, hi, Mike and Michael and Jeannie. How are you?
Well, Rex, we haven't heard your voice in a while. We're doing well. How are you? COVID finished, I hope?
I hope. I trust it is. I'm not seeing any symptomology, so that's good.
Awesome.
No, lungs cleared, body's cleared, and doing well. But I do have a very intriguing question. And all the time that I've been working with the Mind Goal Management process and actually teaching it, the first time I've ever had a question asked this way. So I was excited about posing it to you and hearing what your input is.
Great, let's go for
it. The question, what we're working with is the part of the, when we go to sleep, we cancel all our goals right before falling into sleep or going to rest. And,
right.
You know, all conscious, unconscious, unfulfilled goals that we have set.
Correct.
And the question was, well, if we're canceling all our goals and all behaviors, including the behavior of breathing, which is based on the goal of being alive, if we're canceling it, why doesn't that goal cancel?
Well, actually, you might want to, you know, inform them. Now we're getting into physiology, and there's this thing called the autonomic nervous system. It is not based on goals, but based on physiology. So it's a function of physiology. And what I offer to people when they do that is you go to sleep stress-free except for the goal for deep, restful, regenerative sleep. So that's what I offer to
that's
people
helpful.
When I instruct them in using that, is that you do have a goal, and that is singular, and that's the only goal that's there. And, of course, that's going to cover all of the functions of the autonomic nervous system as well.
So then functions would not follow in line with behaviors or actions then. They are different.
Well, if you remember from Laws of Living, our definition of behavior is the movement of a muscle. So it would, but they're not under control of the mind, nor are they a result of us setting goals as such. It's not something that's under the – I mean, we can step into an impact and shift, you know, choose to shift, let's say, for instance, the way we're breathing or not breathing. But the normal breathing rhythm is under control of the autonomic nervous system. It's not under control of the mind in the way that we would think of the mind and setting goals for things that we do have control over directly. So we don't have control over, you know, the fact that the body's going to breathe and the body's going to digest. That's part of the autonomic nervous system. We can interfere with them. I mean, if we live in rage and hate, we can interfere with digestion and such, but it's not the result of a goal that we've initiated. Oh, let's see, I was conceived yesterday. Well, let's see, I'm at the fourth month and I just got a stomach and I'm going to – mind, we want to digest. No, that's all part of the autonomic nervous system. It's not an intellectual or goal-oriented process as such, but it is the movement of a muscle, which is behavior. But behavior determined by the autonomic nervous system. Actually, I just did, and I don't know if you might have looked at the video. I did a practitioner's call once a month with the Avison, and I did a video on the autonomic nervous system and how the Avison impacts and the sympathetic versus parasympathetic balance and how the in the arenas where we've interfered, and the way we interfere is by shutting down blood flow and creating crystallization, and how the Avison helps to open that up. So I don't know if you've seen that video. I think I did send you a link to it. If not, I will send you one, and it ties into this conversation too.
That's great.
That's
something I
just
don't
did
remember
about a month ago.
You may have sent it to me, but I don't remember seeing
well,
it. So please,
I'll send it off in your direction again. Yeah.
Thank you. And that's really helpful, and I can see where I got a little confusion. The laws of living, as I recall, does talk about the autonomic nervous system when we're talking about goals, doesn't it? Trying to remember, because it seems like we cover it there briefly. That would be, like you just said, but I can't remember. So where I got confused was I had put in my awareness that all behavior and actions is like you defined it, all muscle movement, and the lungs is muscle movement, and that's where I got a little confused. So I appreciate your clarification. The autonomic nervous system runs the blood flow, runs the heartbeat, runs the the
absorption of oxygen, digestion.
Right.
The liver's going to, you know, detox things. The spleen's going to do blood. We didn't at some stage in our development in the womb say, oh, spleen's kicking in now. I think I'll set a goal to make new blood cells. Liver, oh, mom just had a drink and we need to detoxify some alcohol. Liver, go to that. That's all under control of the autonomic nervous system. Yes, thank goodness. And on the other hand, we can interfere with it and not even realizing that we're interfering with it. And that's part of what that video link's about. So I'll send that to you.
Right on. I'll watch it. We have our support group, the Optimal Being support group that we have for graduates that we meet on every Tuesday and or Wednesday alternating each week. And I was inspired to, take the mind goal management sheet because we don't bring that to people's awareness in the actual Optimal Being program because we can't put everything in there. I mean, it's just the 20 modules and 30 modules. So we left that
It'd
out
be 15
because
years.
It covers exactly. And so what we did, I felt inspired to bring that out. So I took the worksheet, put it on the screen, and then took everybody through it and then encouraged them to go to your website and research it and download it so that they had more of your teaching on it. It isn't, I don't think, is any different other than this one piece than what I teach, but I always get more information every time I talk with you about something, and in addition, anytime I review the videos. So all the listeners, that's always a positive because I've been doing this work with Michael and teaching this work for over 20 years, but doing the work for going on almost 43 years, I think. So even now, here's another piece I get to clarify. So it's exciting. I appreciate it. And it'll be great to be able to bring that to the group with more clarification.
Sure. And if they want a short form, another perspective on the My Goal Management Sheet, we cover it in the DVD, which we've also now got our DVDs available for streaming download. People can buy a streaming download of it. And instead of being $40, as DVDs are, they're $20. And we cover the My Goal Management Sheet in that, getting the stress you need.
Yes. Yeah. Excellent. I appreciate you bringing that back up again. I have shared that with many of my clients and our participants. Awesome.
Sweet.
Thank you, Michael.
Awesome.
And thank you both for all that you do. Appreciate you. I'll go back on mute. I'll listen as long as I can, but we've got guests coming here this afternoon. But we sure are enjoying
living in Okay, hope your new home's working well. Awesome.
It is. It's working well. Building out my office
Fabulous.
And getting things set up there, but it's quite a process. Appreciate you.
Good. Is Mama, is she setting up a doula practice there?
Well, she's listening right now. She's in the kitchen. Probably hear some of the noise. Here she comes.
Hi, Michael. Hi, everybody.
Someone's in the kitchen with Mitzi. Someone's in the kitchen, I know. Hey.
Yeah. Hi. Actually, I'm kind of enjoying semi-retirement from my doula practice.
Good for you.
Yeah. 40 years of being on call is a long time. So
that's
I'm
a long time.
Repeat clients. It is. I'm taking my repeat clients. So people who have already assisted in their birth, if they called me, I would come to their birth, but I'm not taking any new clients.
But I did
take a little part-time job around the corner from our new house. I have a greenhouse. Which I'm digging. I'm just working a couple days a week for 6 weeks during their busy season just to get to know my community. So I'm having fun.
Yeah, sweet. Nice. Well, when you mentioned that after being on call for 40 years, here we are now. We're in Bristol, Virginia, with Jeannie's dad getting sick and the fact that, it was almost nursing home for him with the rest of the family, and we decided we were going to stop traveling and move in here. It's actually really nice that I live somewhere for the first time in 40 years. I actually, every night, for 3.5 years now, I've laid my head down in the same bed. It's really pretty awesome. So I know what that's like.
Yes, and I thought about you when you were, on the road all those years. I thought about you guys like, man, that would not be an easy thing for most people. I'm just glad that you now have have a bed that you lie your head on every single night and that you're not on the road. I think that's well, for all of you.
So am I, and you know what? It's not an easy thing for anybody. No, it wasn't easy. It was a lot of, what should I say, a lot of opportunities to learn forgiveness, lots of stresses and strains on both the autonomic and the conscious nervous system, and being here has been a real space of respite and rest. We're doing more taking care of ourselves personally. And, you know, as we transition the work, the app is really stepping up and really moving out around the globe more and more. And we just got somebody else who volunteered to translate the book into Polish. So we've got another translation getting ready to come online. So things are rocking and we're just changing the way that we're taking it out on a global scale. And yeah. Having this this space is really awesome. And, of course, having Arya Rain, our granddaughter, who's now 3 and a half, to be with her 3 days a week is just, well, you know what that's like. And you're getting to be with your little grandbabies full time, it sounds like, or pretty close to it. So that's pretty awesome.
It's so beautiful. Yeah.
It is. I hear you loud and clear.
I look at that as one of the gifts of COVID, right? Like the ability to just think more broadly about how we do things and not having to be everywhere in person. So to me, it's like one of the silver linings and all that crazy stuff. But all right. God bless you guys.
Well, actually, it's been a major. Yeah. It actually, you know, both Jeannie and I, as I know you guys did, had COVID, and it was actually a major gift and a major health upgrade for both of us. Both of us have gotten some specific things that with the challenging of the immune system, and I take it the willingness to do our work, we've really seen some significant changes in our physiology that have been really a positive upgrade because of COVID, from having had COVID. So it is a gift if we're ready, I think, to process it consciously. So cool.
Awesome.
Well, you have a blessed day.
Thank you.
All right. Blessings. Hey, cheers, you guys. Take care. Blessings. Bye-bye. Question, right?
Thank you.
All right. Well, cool. That was nice. That was a good call. So if you're out there in listener land, put a hand up. Let's have a conversation. How can we take things to the next level? One of the things that's been on my mind today, I've actually been working with a couple of people on the phone and who are people who have been around the work for a long time. And I just... You know, there's kind of a belief in the world, or at least it appears to me, that, you know, we've got to be busy, 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 and do, which I've been, you know, known to do myself. Fortunately for me, I chose to make that around doing this work, so it's kind of supported me in moving forward in my own personal process and my own personal work. But I've been interacting with a couple of people who've been around to work for a long time, and it's kind of like, well, this is really fun and interesting. When I'm sick, I want to get better. And a lot of people, I think, take on the belief that you have to be sick to get better. And my offering is you don't have to be sick to get better. You can choose to get better by doing your work instead of waiting till you're up against the wall. I was processing with a person today who's dealing with personal crisis in his own physiology, personal crisis in his family. Interesting that, you know, as he spoke about some dynamics that went on with the power person, he used words that literally reflected we'd done some processing around a diagnosed disease process that he's been going through and some serious treatment that he's had. And in the family dynamic, the exact words came up that replicated the symptoms that he was having from this serious diagnosis just, you know, recently. And what I noticed was, it's like when I'm up against the wall, boy, I'm going to get those worksheets out and I'm going to do some work, or I'm going to think about it, or I might not do a worksheet at all, but I'm going to call Michael and say, hey, Michael, how do I resolve this? How do I fix this? And then not do it. And so my invitation to everybody who's listening is, you know, this healing process is not Dr. Feelgood to face and deal with what's inside of us to deal with the generational patterns can be horrendously painful. Can be. Now, the more willingness there is, the softer the energy field is going to be, the faster the energy is going to move, and the faster we can move through something. You know, you've probably heard me say before that we can take something that took 2 minutes to develop, and if we're in a resistance stage, 10 years later, we can still be dealing with the symptoms of that. We can take something that's horrific that took 10 years to develop and 2 minutes of willingness, and we can be done with it. But if we go into a healing process in resistance and don't really want to look at, don't really want to access, don't really want to work through things, the idea can be, well, I'm not sick, so I don't have to do it. Well, I'm not sick. And then when you're sick, pardon me, cancel the thought, when someone is sick, the tendency is it's a lot more difficult to dig in and do the work that needs to be done, to process through what needs to be dealt with. And so just, you know, as a piece of input at this point, if you're toying with the work, stop toying with the work and do it seriously, out of willingness, out of choice, not because your back's pushed against the wall, not because, you know, finances went bad, not because a relationship is under stress, not because there's a disease process happening, not because there's a business failure, not because you're against the wall doing it, but because you choose to continue to do your work and improve because your vision is that of wholeness and wellness and full well-being. And you build the brain cells not in the emergency situation of your back being against the wall, but just on a daily ongoing basis. You develop the awareness of, you build the brain cells for what needs to be done when it needs to be done. And as you do that over time, when a crisis comes, you can soften your physiology so much easier and move through the crisis instead of being an emergency, oh, I got to fix this now, I got to deal with this now. And, you know, and here, you know, the person I was speaking with this morning, they had several, you know, a family crisis on top of a health crisis and on top of a financial crisis. It's like it all came together at once. And it's like all of a sudden got his attention. It's like, oh, I want to do some work on this. And here he is in grief and in judgment and in failure and in pain and in rage. It's like that's a lot to handle. When the crisis comes, if over the last 25 years, and this is a person that literally has been engaged in the work for 25 years or more, you'd taken that on a daily basis, there'd be a little dose of something. It might be a stress or strain, might be a challenge for a minute or a day or a week or a month. But now, 25 years later, you wouldn't be all of a sudden saying, oh, I need to do 25 years of work now in the next 10 minutes to get through this. You know, you've been introduced to the tools, take them in stride, make them a daily part of your life. My suggestion is that you tithe, and tithing doesn't mean money. Money is an aspect of tithing, yes, but I use the acronym TIME, T-I-M-E, time, intelligence, money, and energy. Get to the point where you tithe 10% of your time. That means that you set your life up so you do 2.4 hours a day of your work. Now, when I first started doing this work, I mean, came out of the business world. I worked 18 hours a day, 19 days a week. You know, it was stress and strain, and I didn't take a minute to do this work. But gradually, over time, I saw the benefit of and the need for, and then shifted out of the business world into doing this full-time. So I didn't need to tithe 2.4 hours a day. I do, you know, 24 hours a day. By the way, Rex, if you're still on, the other vision is, or the other goal to set in sleep is, that if Ruka has any, or the unconscious has any information to give you, that can be a goal, a minor stress that you set. If there's any information I need about my process, about my physiology, about what I'm doing with, about this specific topic, ask for that guidance, and then giving your mind the instruction in the morning, you'll remember to recall that guidance and put it to work. Actually, another tool that we suggest is that, you know, at night, if there's something you really need some feedback and support on, you have a glass of water, you drink half of the glass of water while telling yourself that you're open to guidance and you're willing to receive whatever guidance is needed regarding this or that issue, whatever it happens to be. And then in the morning, when you drink the other half of the glass of water as you wake up, you'll remember exactly that what that guidance was and exactly how to apply it. And so that can be another stress that you want to take into sleep. That can be taken into stride in sleep and as a constructive stress to move forward and, you know, just really take the work and integrate it on a daily basis. As life unfolds, rather than waiting for the stress moments and the urgency of I have to do it, when under stress and urgency, especially when somebody isn't feeling good physically and, you know, somebody in the family's raging in the background, place to develop skills, to develop the abilities to really tap in your highest possibility and your highest vitality and do your work. So just putting that out as an invitation for everybody. And so time, 2.4 hours a day, ultimately, to doing your work. Intelligence, take 10% of your intelligence. So, you know, maybe if you're in business or you have a job or whatever, use your intelligence for that. Make sure that you apply, not my intelligence, your intelligence. Your original intelligence is where your teacher is, inside of you. Practice that, utilize that, put that to work so that in any given situation, you will know because you have a direct connection. You know, the idea of this work isn't to connect to anybody out there. It's to be connected to that power within you, to be available to that presence of love in you that will guide you fully. And so using your original intelligence in doing your work. Yes, your money, that you take 10% of your income and you put it toward your spiritual development and toward what supports you developing spiritually. Yes, that is a component of it, but it's not the most important. It's probably the least important. And then the last one, an acronym time, is energy, that you take 10% of your vital alive energy. It's not a matter of, yes, I take 10%. Yeah, I've worked really hard today and I'm home and I'm exhausted and now I'm going to go and have a nap. I mean, I'm going to go meditate, do my 10%. No. Take your original vital energy and put it into doing your work. Then go to work. Go do your job. But put it first into your ties toward your spiritual development. And so put those things to work on a over the period of a lifetime and awakening and full realization as a true human being is inevitable. It has to happen. If you try to skimp on that and you go put it into things in the world that, you know, for the average person, that's really, really interesting. We are eternal beings. And the average person puts all of their time, intelligence, money, and energy into acquiring things that, again, for the average person, in less than 100 years, they're not going to have. It's going to be gone. You know, is that old story, you can't take it with you? Well, if you're putting all your time, intelligence, money, and energy into something that you can't take with you, does that sound wise? Does that sound like intelligence? Yeah, you got to earn a living. Everybody's got to pay the bills. But put your original intelligence into your eternal beingness and bringing that to the forefront in the world. Now, it's not exactly the way the world's going to train you, but then, you know, if you look at the way the world's going, some things are running pretty roughshod. And at the same time, I really want to bring into that conversation because that can bring people to a defeatist attitude, recognize that the advances in the world that have happened, you know, the number of people being fed and the number of people who have access to water and the number of people who have decency happening around them has expanded exponentially in the last 100 years. Yes, there are still pockets of people starving, still pockets of people being abused, still pockets of people with traumas and, you know, that have to walk, you know, have to invest half of their day's energy just to have water in their home. Yes, those things still exist, but we've made And I think because so many people globally have awakened and are awakening spiritually, we've created a world of support for so much of that to be resolved. We've made so much advancement in the last 100 years. It's phenomenal. And there's still some challenges to go. And so as each person taps in and really truly does the inner work of healing and developing that state of being that is who we are, remembering who we are as conscious, active, present love is so important to the process. And so we hope we're giving some direction that's supportive in your world and in your life. And at the same time, you know, when you talk about that M letter in the time, tithing, you know, if this work is supporting you, if it's changed your life, and we invite you to consider supporting it, you know, with the fact that we're not traveling anymore, especially, you know, that was basically where most of our cash flow came from. And, you know, if you're not aware of it, we traveled, we did our workshops free, and we paid our own expenses and simply invited people to donate to support. Well, if it supported you on a level that is significant, then we invite you to consider supporting us on that financial level in a way that's significant. And you can go to our website, whyagain.org, and there's a donate button there. And whatever fits, whatever, you know, if that fits in your world, if you're not in a position for that, you know, there might be something that you can do, some skill that you have that would assist us and support us. So, you know, anything in that regard, we would be most appreciative. And we're still moving in the direction of expanding the availability of these tools on a global scale. And we appreciate every piece of support that shows up and assists us in doing it. And so, Miss Jeannie, we've still got about 30 minutes left for conversation. Is there anybody in the chat room with anything for us or anybody in the phone queue with a hand up?
No, it is all quiet. And I'll
go ahead, sweetie.
Yeah, I'll just throw out, and we did have a hand just go up, but I'll just throw out there you were asking for, you know, financial support. Just as a small example, the cost for us to do the app has gone well over $3,000 just in revisions in the last year, and we offer that for free. So, you know, and there's lots of projects like that that are going on, but that's just the first one that popped in my mind. But, you know, so any support in any area, you know, anyway, it's appreciated, and we'll go to our caller.
For sure. Let's say hello.
So it is area code 904. Dusty, you're on the air.
Well, aloha, Michael, Jeannie, and listeners.
Aloha, young man. How do you be?
Well, I'm doing a pretty fair. You know, I have my challenges too, but I'm doing well. And what you were just saying about growth, I mean, it just hit me. I've had this concept for a long time, and I've watched to see how it plays out, and that's comfort zones. And it seems to me, and I suppose I have to include myself in this too, but that they just don't want to leave their comfort zones unless a disease or an accident or something traumatic makes them deal with their comfort zones. And sometimes those discomfort zones are, you know, they're a malevolent place, somewhere you don't want to go, but often it's where the growth is needed. And because there's just a little bit of discomfort, to go into that and see what that is and deal with it, it won't happen. And briefly, a quick example is I have about 3-4 buddies that are, I can see them getting older, and I can sense a little cognitive decline. They will not learn any kind of breathing. They will not do deep breathing. They will not do any kind of pranayamas, still point breathing, any of that. They won't do it because there's a little discomfort it first. And so I guess the choice is you grow old faster and die faster, or you do this work that you're talking about.
Right. Well, one of my favorite tongue-in-cheek lines in this work is, pain has a really beautiful purpose. It makes your ears grow. And unfortunately, most people won't listen to, oh, I need to make a shift unless there's pain behind it to motivate them. Most people get so caught up in, you know, I got to get more stuff. I got to make more money. I got to pay more. Got to do more. And they don't listen to that inner guidance. They don't take the time. You know, one of the things that I've noticed for me, you know, when we were on the road, and it was, I mean, we do 25 or 30 cities a year, or sometimes, you know, one year we did, I think, 7 or 8 different countries. And so it was a pretty busy world. You know, we'd leave Heartland in September or maybe early October. And we'd start out and we'd be in a city for a week and another city and another city and another city. And we'd do that until, oh, maybe late May or early June, we'd be back at Heartland. And so, you know, as I said to Rex a few minutes ago, one of the things we've been doing since we've lighted here is taking more time to take care of ourselves, to listen and, you know, do what it takes to step up to the next level. And,
right.
And part of that means that we need to look at the discomfort that we're carrying around physiologically, mentally, emotionally, relationally, financially. And most people, you know, one of the biggest drugs, or pardon me, the most common drug on the planet is busyness. Actually, Rex, back several years ago, Jeannie and I were in Ionia, Michigan, working in a state super security federal prison. It was actually an old Civil War fort that they'd converted to a prison, and they took all of the most trauma-oriented, the most troublesome prisoners in the state of Michigan and put them in this one prison in Ionia. And we did a couple of weeks of workshops, and then Rex went in and started to work on a support group with these folks and ultimately taught laws of living there. And there's always been a tradition that when people do laws of living, you know, even in the prison system, when we did pretrial release programs, they had the prisoners, this was a requirement of the judge, the prisoners had to pay for it. Because, you know, the judge knew if you could get something for nothing, you don't, you know, there's not nearly as much appreciation. Anyway, it was set up so that the cost, because these guys are, I mean, they were from 25 years to life, the cost of entering into laws of living was over the support group that led up to it. There was a requirement that people do 5 worksheets a day. And
wow.
When laws of living went to start, the universal excuse, and I mean from every person in the group, and these are guys that are locked in their cells 23 out of 24 hours a day. Maybe if they've got a job in the commissary or the, you know, what have you, they might be out of the cell for another couple of hours, but otherwise they're locked in their cells. But literally every one of them, the reason they weren't ready to hand in that 5 worksheets a day, they were too busy.
Yeah,
they were locked in their cells, and they were too busy.
Yeah.
It's like,
wow.
And that's
amazing. I don't even think I could sell that to myself no matter how hard I tried.
Yeah. Yeah.
And busyness, yeah, I agree, busyness. And then on the shift off to one side, and I see it also not just as busyness, but it's just people's perspective, their worldview, there's a particular, let's say you've got good vision and you put on a helmet, now you can only see 20% of what's around you. Well, I see people walk around with that 20%. That's all they think there is, and they don't want any more. And if you come along and you seem like you're outside that 20%, you're a threat or something. And it's a conceptual thing, I think, also.
Absolutely.
And
well, actually, that's
go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, that was it. I mean, I look around and I just see it everywhere, and just narrow bands of consciousness with unconsciousness around it, and I don't claim that I've got my 360 going all the time either, but it's scary to me. It scares me a little bit to see
something outside of you scares you. Something outside of you
scares
you. Really?
What's that? No,
something outside of you scares you. I didn't know that was possible.
Right.
For something outside of us
for the world,
something to move inside of us. I didn't know that was possible.
Yeah.
In any event, what I was going to say is that. No, keep going. I thought you were complete.
Anyways, I was just going to say that it was like, let's say, well, your average listener right now has probably got, several, just the fact that they're listening, probably have way more bandwidth, I think, in terms of RF electronics, I guess, but way more bandwidth in their perceptual abilities than I can see 5 or 6 people. And they're all just, I don't know, it's just funny how just one little area of awareness. And
right.
I know when I sit down to meditate in the evening, early evening, I go through about a half hour of things that deal with my physiology and my pineal and blah, 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 blah. But there usually comes a point where I go, okay, I know I'm not getting something. And I'm feeling a discomfort, whatever. And I try to lay myself open to knowing what that is and to feeling it and going into it. And I guess I do not have a comfort zone to start with. So I'm not one to talk, I guess, about this too far. But that collective narrow bandwidth of consciousness relative to the human experiment, which has been very brief, it's worrisome a little bit.
It's been enforced by kings. I think for most people, it's initiated in their lives by kings. We've used the exact analogy for years in this work of we're designed. We come into the world with 360-degree vision. And then the world starts to put a set of blinders on us, much like, we've used the analogy, if you've got a horse and it's got no blinders on and there's a female over there or there's some oats over there, that horse is gone. It's not plowing the field. So what do? They put a set of blinders on. So the only thing the horse can see is what's in front of it and what its job is, what it's supposed to do. Well, kings want people who will do what kings want. If they want, somebody to go off and murder people from called another country. We created this whole game called Countries out of a unified humanity. If, kings want their property and their women and their valuables and their land, then, somebody's got 360-degree vision functioning as a human being. You can't get them to do that. So what do kings do? They put a set of blinders on. They close down the field of vision. So, now it's tunnel vision. It's what's in front of you, and that's what most people do. And it's so, there's a lot of conversation about CRT, about critical race theory and how, this racism is a part of the whole culture, which, God, if anybody can't see that one, it's about as plain as a nose on anybody's face. But also this closing down of perception and understanding is part of the cultural brainwash in order to force people into, commercial business and being good commercial servants. You got to put a pair of blinders on for somebody who's got, a small child at home that's just been born that, is so valuable to have time with them, but you got to run off and make money. You got to put something on those people to get them to do that on a regular basis. I think that's something that COVID has given to people today is the chance to sit back and, we can't go do what the king wants us to do, be good commercial servants. We've got to stay home. And I think that's given people a chance to scratch their heads and go, should I really be doing that? Should I really be rushing back off to that? Is that really sane? And I think a lot of people have taken their blinders off in that regard and starting to wake up. And that's what we need is some wake up. So that's, I think, one of the gifts of this whole COVID thing, too.
What you said about the culture, and I absolutely think that that's other than maybe some aspect of human nature, but it is the biggest, shall we say, sort of form that that you have to bend to that will. And I have a friend, he's passed on now, but his name was, he's an indigenous guy named Ed Eagle McGaw, and he wrote a book. And he used a phrase that has served me so well, and I want to share it. He says, this is the dominant culture. It's not the culture.
Right.
It's maybe a culture. And right now it's the dominant culture. And so whether you're back 2,000 years ago and it's the Romans oppressing or some dominant culture, that's it. And it makes you, I mean, you have to really, you have to be on your A game or very lucky or something to escape enough of that cultural demand.
Well, and we could break that word in half. It's a cult. You know, have you seen the movie Of Gods and Generals?
Yeah.
Of Gods and Generals?
Yeah.
If you remember, there's a scene in there that really impacted me when I watched it. For anybody who's listening who's not familiar with that film, it was created by Turner Broadcasting, and I understand that Ted Turner was really a Civil War buff and everything had to be accurate. And there's a place in that movie where, and I don't remember who the characters were. I think it might have been Jackson and Lee were having a conversation. You know, some of the generals and the conversation going on about, you know, well, we've got to win because if we don't, commerce and banking, I mean, this literally is said in the movie, commerce and banking will take over our country.
Uh-huh.
And you look at, you know, I mean, I have trepidation, done a few worksheets on this, about the fact that our daughter-in-law is talking about school for our granddaughter. Now, our granddaughter is in one continuous conversation. It never stops. She's singing. She's dancing. She's talking. She's playing. She's learning. You know, yesterday we have a, she has a little wooden horse and it fell off. Well, she's awake. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
We have a little toy horse and it fell off the table. And she picked it up and she said, well, we need to do some healing. And said to Jeannie, we need to, can you show me how to do some, and she couldn't remember, but one of the things we've talked to her about in her learning about anatomy and physiology, which she's just enamored with, is the thing we teach and we do called orthobiomy. And so, you know, she picks her horse up and she put, asked Nini, will you guide me through? And so she's walking through. She knows she has half of the steps already, and she takes her wooden horse and walks it through a whole orthobiomy session right down to teaching it to breathe. And then she picks up her dog toy, and she wants to do the same with her dog toy and show the dog how to do proper breathing in order to heal. And, you know, that's an ongoing thing for her. And I have this trepidation about, well, Mom, you know, if you send her into a school, all that's got to stop because she's going to be told to shut up. I mean, teacher, understandably, can't have 30 kids doing that. She's going to be told to shut up, sit down, listen, because we have some information to put in your head to make you the kind of commercial servant, which is what the educational system is about, to turn people into good commercial servants. You got to be able to do the job for the master, as opposed to the real meaning of the word educate. Educare means to draw out. You know, what we do as her educators at 3 and a half is we watch where she wants to and needs to go for her energy. And when she leads, like when she led into orthobiomy, both of us sat with her and walked her through and guided her through another session of learning how to do orthobiomy phenomenally powerful healing modality, and that would all stop if she goes into a system that means we're going to turn you into the kind of commercial servant that will be useful for the culture or for the cult. And, you know,
yes, that's a conundrum I can see for you guys, because well, she's lucky to fortunate for whatever reason that she's got a grandpa, grandma, and all that kind of thing that probably parents that have some time.
Well, and beautifully, you know, we do that, and her other grandparents are from the Philippines. They're Filipino.
Oh.
And so they're teaching her Tagalog and teaching her the traditions of the Filipino culture, and they are just so with her in the same way that we are. I mean, she's got, and her parents are the same. Just, I mean, her dad, when he's got a day off, is with his daughter playing and, you know,
wow,
just part of that learning process. And it is like, I've had to do some breathing and some forgiveness around, boy, I wish I'd had this childhood.
Yeah, I was just thinking that's what I want to be when I grow up. Just
yep.
What she is.
Yep.
Yeah. And
I've
been fortunate because I've had to operate outside the box. But now there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of, it's like the spaces between the molecules almost are more filled these days. There isn't that freedom of, I did things in the 70s.
Compressed
80s.
Gas.
Yes. I couldn't do those things now. I mean, I couldn't do any of it.
Yeah.
Adventuring
yeah.
and stuff. I mean, people, I don't know, you know, it's, so the solution, boy, I know you have to go inside and find what the spirit or whatever your inner guide is telling you that you're about.
Yes.
And try to find a way to then to express that and still manage the culture without it coming to get you.
Yes. One of the workshops they do is entitled Purpose, Personal Power, and Commitment, and we have a worksheet in that workshop that guides people back to prior to education, what's your purpose? Who are you really? What's your real purpose? And then we invite people or inform people that energy systems don't gather more power by efforting. You know, you never saw a car that went, I'm going to try harder to get down the road. You know, you never saw a TV that was a little off tune say, well, I'm going to see if I can get this station better. What do? You align the antenna. You align the system to bring through a greater flow of energy. And so
yeah.
when we align with our purpose, when we know who we are and function out of our purpose, then personal power is a natural result of that. And so, you know, it all ties together for sure.
Well spoken, that personal power part. I like that a lot. And I'll also
we have a definition.
This out. Well, you use the word the personal power.
Right. We have a specific definition.
And I like that.
But we have a specific definition for
comment. Go ahead.
We got a delay happening here. I was just going to say we have a specific definition for personal power in that workshop, and that is the ability to be continuously aware of and function out of our highest guidance. Not out
yes.
of brainwash,
and,
not out of culture,
you know,
but out of the highest
is,
guidance.
For me, the biggest problem with that in some ways is, well, for one thing, at this point in the last few years, I've been the only one in my pod, but self-talk, you know, that inner dialogue that's always kind of going on.
Really important, yes.
Oh, boy, I mean, I have to catch myself going, you know, just on about nothing. You know, like majoring in minor things, you know, and
yep.
And go back to, okay, I'm coming back to this exact moment now, and I'm opening myself up to the glory of whatever is, really. And I have to do that just ongoing through the day. Or, you know,
you're not alone.
And I think about the, I've really been, I've been watching a series, and two or three series on, ancient, they say, you know, at least this grand cycle of civilization, et cetera, and before that. And it's interesting
right.
to me that the anthropologists on these programs saying, well, you know, we've all had about the same brain, the same hardware for about at least 100 or probably closer or more than 200,000 years.
Right.
And the hunter-gatherers, granted, there weren't that many people, but what their technology was perfect, and it was relative to the Earth, and they seemed to do pretty dang well for 200,000 years. So now we're into this beginning of, people think of Mesopotamia, oh, that's the beginning of everything wonderful. Well, in my eyes, it's sort of the ending, in a sense, because that's when you get the kings and the stratification of society rather
yes.
than people based just on their innate abilities and consciousness.
Yeah. And we can have the best of both worlds if we do it consciously.
And I've broken enough bones to prove it, which is what they find in the skeletons.
Right.
Hunter-gatherers, there's very little signs of disease. In fact, as soon as farming started, they could see signs of disease and stooped over shoulders and archaeologically, the skeletal remains, everything wasn't as good as it was in the hunter-gatherers. The only difference is
right.
hunter-gatherers had lots of broken bones and that,
yeah.
you know, that would ultimately be their demise. But you think about that, 200,000 years, or let's say relative to, what are we talking here? No more than 10 tops here, you know, 5, maybe 2, 3, 4 thousand years.
Right.
And
yep.
we're already to the point where we could take out not only ourselves, but the other, 3 million species on the planet. And
pretty bizarre.
I try to look at that and not run from that. And at the same time go, what can I do about this? What should I do about this? How do I relate to this? And keep my...
Got to become part of the solution.
Life. Yes. And you guys are doing the best you can as a part of the solution. And it seems like that, judging from the phone calls, that you've touched a lot of hearts and minds. And different people do it in different ways if that's their intention. And, I mean, I've tried, but I haven't been as formalized as you. But I did want to go back to the learning of your granddaughter, how she spontaneously, if you let her go, she'll follow her own channels of intelligence and expression and beauty. And I was not a very good academic because I just couldn't sit in my chair that long. And after a couple of years of college and I wanted some engineering licenses, I went out and I found a way to do a self-study, and this was a long time ago, before the online anything, and I just
right.
rocked right through it, boom, and I came up with every FCC license there ever was because I got to do it on my way because I had a passion for it.
Right.
And as long as your granddaughter or any of us have a passion that's beautiful inside us, boy, we'll grow like just magnificently.
For sure.
Instead of that classroom. Yeah.
I'm with you. I'm with you. And it's interesting. The whole Montessori educational system is based on doing exactly that, following the lead of the child, creating an environment where the child can learn what they're ready to learn. And they'll learn it in minutes, as opposed to when they're forced into that environment because it's the commercial system says it's time for them to learn it. That's something that takes years and kids fail. And, you know, they call them poor learners. And they have learning disabilities and ADHD and, you know, all that stuff. And it's more of a product of the system of so-called education, which is really indoctrination, that has left education behind. And we're down to the last minute, so thank you for that input and those conversations. Appreciate you, Justy, and look forward to one of these days we get to Florida, you get up here, and we get to get face to face again.
Oh, I'd love that. I'd love that. Yeah. And
all right, my friend,
I might
sure
even drag you out in the ocean with me.
Hey, there you go. I'd love it. That would be awesome.
Okay. Okay, brother.
All right, take
later.
Care. Blessings. All righty. Bye-bye.